pretty awkward.
Right, why didn't it turn off?
Okay.
Oh, you cold.
I don't know what's bothering.
I didn't put this on the thing. So the first story we're going to open up with is a story actually of Sicha. That Yaakov Avinu, their lights.
Yes, they're on.
No, right. So Yaakov Avinu realizes that it's time to go home. He's hanging out in Lavan's house. And then when Yosef is born, he realizes it's time to go home. What the connection is, that he was waiting for Yosef's birth and going home, what that connection is, I'll leave to you. It's a complex piece. It's a good piece to just think about. All you need is your head and come up with ideas and answers. However, he has to take care of one thing first, and that is he has to take the sheep. He's got to get his sheep, and you got to wonder, like, what's with the sheep? Leave the sheep. Go home. God is waiting. Yeah, you know, everybody, your homeland is Eretz Yisrael. You can go home. Go home. What are you doing? You're out in the Chutz Laretz. Well, I have to get my money. But yeah, the old joke goes, if you want to be have a little fortune in Israel, bring a big fortune.
Yeah.
So I have to go get my big fortune first in Chutz Laretz in order to have something here. Is that pshat? Like, what's going on? Yeah, you could. So we find that Rashi actually addresses this issue. He doesn't address the issue over here. We want to know why Yaakov loves the flock. What's with the sheep? So Yaakov Avinu does this another time, and that is he. Yaakov Avinu, later on, it's time to go back home. He gets into Eretz Yisrael, and he's going to have a fight with Esau's, Malach of Esau, who knows what that is. He has a fight. And he gets hit in the thigh. And where was he when this fight happened? Like, where was everybody else? Where were his kids? Where was his family? So, well, there were these little jugs that he left. This is Rashi. These little pachim katanim. These little things that he left. Oh, you forgot the Tupperware? How could you? Kids, come on! How could you do that? I like that. Just forget it. Come on. It's just Tupperware. Give it up. Man. We'll find some barbware, maybe, in Israel. You know, it's like, just leave it. And he's like, I'm not going to leave that for anything. And he goes back and risks his life. He knew it would be a risky thing, but that's okay, because you should risk your life for the 5 cent Tupperware container. And Rashi notes this and says, well, that's because tzaddikim chasa al mamonam, tzaddikim care about their money yoter minafsha, more than their souls. What? That makes no sense. You gotta be kidding. I don't understand why he stayed for the sheep. But why did he stay for the sheep? Because they like their money. He's a tzaddik. Tzaddikim like money. That's why they got those big long coats. Out of the coat. Million here. What is going on? And Rashi is like making it even more troubling by saying, oh yeah, that's the truth. That's MSLP Torah, that tzaddikim should have that value system of care about money more than their lives. So what's pshat? And it gets more complex when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, I'm taking the Jews out of Egypt, but please make sure, please, you got to do me a favor. No. Please make sure to tell the Jews to ask for money from their Egyptian neighbors before they leave. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the 10th or 11th parak, depending on how you count, but we'll call it parak Chelek, has a whole debate between the prototypical Egyptian and the prototypical Jew, where the Egyptian claims you took our money, you asked to borrow it, and you did not come back. And the prototypical Jew responds, well, you see, we worked for you for 210 years at the lowest wage of, let's say, even a cucumber watcher. That would come out to, you know, minimum wage, $2.10 each hour, times that by about 600,000 Jews working for about 20 hours a day. You still owe us a lot more than whatever we walked away with. Whatever we walked away with, you still owe more. So, you know, you don't really have any claim. Again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to tell the Jews, guess what, it's time to go. They've been in terrible servitude. It's been horrific. This is wonderful news. We're going to get out of here. No? But wait. We first have to collect. God, how about this? If you want to make us wealthy, why don't you just let us discover gold in the desert? We don't need to stay in Egypt any longer. There's no need. Why in the world? They stay in Egypt another 10 months, 12 months. I don't know what the exact count is, which medrash she used to figure it out. Why in the world are they still there? Oh, because we got to collect. Yaakov Avinu, you realize you have to go back home. Why are you staying in Chak? You got to collect. You got to go back for the Pachim Kzak. Got to collect. What's with this? What's chat? Everybody got to collect. And Rashi, oh yeah, well that's the way of the tzaddikim. The tzaddikim do that. They have to collect. So, I have a friend who was did a typical mutra meal. If you go to Mea Sharim for Shabbos, you don't actually need plans. It's kind of like in the hospital now, where we've been now for 3 Shabboses, going on 4. There's this Peretz family, that's their last name. Have no children, the legend has it. They're a young couple, 45, 50 years old, and they've taken upon themselves to feed anyone that gets stuck in the hospital for Shabbos. They prepare about, I would say, about 1,000 meals for each meal, 1,000 portions. About 200, 100 men, 100 women are set up at a buffet, not at a buffet, but at a dining room hall, where they try to make it Leibedik for the people that stay, and then they have a few hundred meals that are packaged, everything in a chad pami, a throwaway container. You have your kiddush with a cover, with a plastic cup, and a cup, you fill the fish with the carrot, and then the chayin in a separate one. And they got, like, it's outrageous. Soup with a canado, and every single thing in a throwaway container. It's unbelievable, and they do this every single Shabbos. I've been in Adas and Karen. At this point, we're probably working this day on our 4th Shabbos, but in total, probably about 20 Shabboses by now. I think this will be Mitzvah, our 20th Shabbos in Adas and Karen for Shabbos. And so every single Shabbos they're there, and they do this. So if you move to a meal, let's say Hadassah and Karim, you know, you're set. Don't worry. You've got it covered. If you go to Mei Sharm, you also don't have to worry. You go to the Karlin Stolen Shul. Stolen Kasim.
That's where they scream.
That's true. That's a crazy, crazy thing, because it says, they scream the whole davening, and then there are a few places in the Siddur, in their Siddur, where it says, and this, Ya'anenu B'kol Rum. They've been screaming until now. What are you implying? And you really hear it. It's really, it gets very intense. So just bring earplugs, and no matter how you dress, you could try to buy some payas, you will stand out. Everybody stands out, and they have an unwritten rule there that you get invited out if you're a guest. So I did this with a roommate of mine. I had no plans, no backup plans. We just went to Karlin Stalin for Shabbos, and we got invited out. It was absolutely an incredible Shabbos. And a friend of mine, a different Shabbos, a well-known name actually, he's an educator in Toronto, Rav Rafi Littner. So, you met him? he sat behind us in the Grosskola, good chaver of mine. So he went one Shabbos. He had the following experience. He was invited out. And the guy said to him, listen, I have a lot of crazy menhagim. And for me to explain every one of them would really take way too many hours. So I'll make you a deal. The ones you catch and you ask me, I'll be happy to explain. If you don't catch it, then it'll just be a bygone. Fine. Deal was made. And they're eating. And after the filpa fish, right before the soup, is being served, this guy, this Balbat, he collects all the crumbs on the table, chal crumbs, he collects it, puts it in his hand, and throws it in his soup. So Rafi Lipner says, is that a minhag? Or is that just how you like crumbs? So he says, ah, that's a minhag. And that is, you can't waste anything. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to you, you can't waste it. And that changes everything. Hashem gave it to you. You can't waste it. There's a an incredible mashal or story brought down in a sefer called Shevet Musar, which is a crazy sefer in and of its own right. If you get a copy of the sefer and open the front page, you'll see a wild, wild story that we have the sefer in this world. Disappeared and somehow someone brought it back, and it's a wild sefer. It's one of the first early Musar Svarim, phenomenal sefer, very different if you've been reading or learning some of the more famed ones, Archos Tzadikim or Mesil Sharm. This is vastly different. This talks to I would say his three biggest themes are how to learn and not to listen to other people to tell you how to learn. And number two, the lessons. He says that people that tell you learn this way as opposed to this way are the satan, and don't listen to them and run away from it. Everyone should find a way that they like to learn. And he repeats that message throughout the sefer. He talks about people that are wealthy, all the avoda that they get introduced to, they're encountered with. And he talks the message of the poor person as well, everything that he has to contend with, and he tries to give a message to each one of these people. And somewhere in the first, second paragraph, I don't remember anymore, it's been a while, so he brings down the following story, wild story. This guy's in the field, and all of a sudden, Eliyahu Navi comes to him with a briefcase of like millions of dollars. And he says, guess what? I'm here to say that you've won the Shemayim jackpot. He's like, really? Wow, that's incredible. And he's like, yeah, all you have to do is tell me, do you want it now or in 7 years? Like, I don't know how to make any decisions in my life. My wife makes all those decisions. You wait here. So he goes home and asks his wife, and she's like, let me get this right. Eliyahu HaNavi is in the field offering you $1 million and you left him there? Like, yeah. I mean, because it was a decision to make, and I don't know how to make decisions. She's like, well, you're a real dodo. So you go tell Eliyahu HaNavi we want it now. So he goes and says, the wife said now. Now, there was one other thing that the wife said, and that is, however, you should be aware that we're going to record, we're going to get a special notebook and record how we spent every single penny, and we're going to use the money for mitzvos and for betterment and spirituality and kedusha. 7 years later, the guy's working in the field. I don't know why, if he has all this money, because he decided to use it all in mitzvos. And he's working in the field, and Eliyahu HaNavi comes and says, okay, where's the money? Where's the money? What do you mean? You gave it to me. What do you think? It's not for good. Everything has to be returned at some point. So, oh, no, you don't. Just like I didn't take it without my wife, you're not getting it back without my wife's permission. He goes, runs home. He's like ready to hyperventilate. You're not going to believe this. He's out in the field again. He wants the money back. What do we do? So he says, she says to him, it's a problem. Go bring him the notebook. You've been keeping scrupulous records for all these years. You go bring him the notebook. And you tell Eliyahu Navi that if there's someone that could have used the money in a better way, that we misused the money. So then Beseda, we'll have to cough it up. We'll have to figure out how to give him back the money. But if we did, if we did use it right, then that's the way we'll pay him back. The man runs to Eliyahu HaNavi, gives him the notebook, tells him the message from his wife, and he ends and says, Zechitem Atem, Zechitem Atem, you've won. Now the scary part of this story is that we're not only dealing with money. We're dealing with every single thing, every single gift that we have in life. We have a lot of gifts. We have family members. We have parts of our bodies at work in Ritz Hashem. We have everything. We have clothing. We have food. Everything and anything that we have that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, has blessed us with. At the end of the day, there's a payback there. You have to be able to pay back. So what does that mean, you have to pay back? At the end of the day, how do you pay back? Pay back with mitzvahs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I've used the hands you gave me to try to do mitzvahs. I've used the legs you've given me to run, to do mitzvahs. I've used the eyes you gave me to look inspiring, to do mitzvahs. I try. And that is the way we pay back. There was once a reporter who wanted to report negatively about Am Yisrael. And he met up with Rav Nachman Kahana, and the people were pushing the guy around. So the guy went to Rav Nachman Kahana and said, Rabbi, the people don't like me. So he said, no, it's not that they don't like you. They just think that you're an anti-Semite, so they hate you. So he said, I'm not an anti-Semite. I just tell news the way it is. So he said, you know, Mr. Blank, said, you know, life is like a supermarket. And you could get your cart and fill it up with all the garbage you want, and the yodels and the dregs and the sugar cereals. At the end of the day, when you get up to that cash register, you're going to be ringing up every single item one by one. And the lady is going to see every single item. When you get up to heaven, you could fill your basket in this world with whatever you want, all the garbage and lies and shenanigans and anti-Semitism. You could fill your basket how you like, but when you get to heaven, they're going to ring it up, every deed and thought and speech, one by one. And there you're not going to pay with a credit card, you're not going to pay with a post-dated check, you're going to pay retribution for every single thing. But Nachman Kahana ended the story. He could have had tshuva right then, it was in his lap, and he just responded, I'm not an anti-Semite, I just tell news the way it is. Okay? He chose not to do tshuva. I don't know the guy, I don't know whose side is right, I don't know anything, but I know one thing. As a mashal, it's phenomenal. Because that's us. That's Yaakov Avinu. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us, how could you just throw it away? That's what it means. When you get, you have 5 cents, what do? You throw it away. Why do you throw it away? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave that to you. He gave that to you as well. So when you go to Shemayim, you say, so Hashem says, so what did you do with that? Oh, I threw it away. It was garbage. That was my money I gave you. I entrusted it with you. What do you mean? But Tzaddik understands that every single thing that he has in life is not for waste, but it's for a reason. And if that's the case, then Chasa al Mamonam, Yosher Minafshim. They're ready to give their lives for their money because they understand their money was given to them by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. How could I just say, who cares? Yeah, I'll just forego it. I'll leave it. What do you mean? You can't leave it. That's not your option. It's not your choice. So, as an opening point, I Everything that we have is really from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Everything that we have is everything. Almost everything. And we have to use it in the best way possible. Yeah, this was the niggun that I get to have a comeback. Shlomo Katz niggun that I tried and failed at miserably. L'chadodi. Difficult. And tough question. It's on many levels, physically. So, not much sleep, not much seeing the kids. Got to figure out where you'll be. Patients need advocates all the time if they're not capable at the moment. And it's a difficult physical life. However, that's not the real difficulty. The real difficulty is how do you be? How do you exist? How do you, like, what do you think? Kaddish Baruch Hu is, well, what do you do with the Kaddish Baruch Hu? What's he doing? So the number of responses that people have when they have difficulties, I can't answer. But I could tell you a few things. Tell you one at a time. Maybe a niggun in between each one. Missed a wedding Sunday. Both Shabbos were supposed to fly out. Sarah Kiddushin for a Talmud that I'm very, very close to. Okay, Rapoz did a great job. Sent him the Ksuba. Okay, wedding number one. Tonight, not getting out of the hospital until about 6, 5:30 tonight. I knew I was not going to be making it to the second wedding, tonight's wedding, because even if I have the minutes, I could go later. Until a little bit ago, I had to see my kids. I neglected them for 3 weeks. Can't do that. Second chasm. Not physically, there's a lot of difficulty, but it's way beyond the physical. Talmidim, Ribbono Shel Olam. How could this be objectively good? That there are Talmidim that need teachings, that need chizuk, that are waiting. There were people waiting to speak with me before I disappeared for 3 weeks. And now, who knows? People may have given up, Chas V'Shalom. Ribbono Shel Olam, how could that be good for you? Uman Shemecha, for your name. People want to get stronger in Torah. I can't teach. And how do you deal on a spiritual level? Talmud was very, very close. It is very, very close to me also. Had shocking news one day. You have to deal with life. When he heard the reports, all of a sudden he has to found out he has a certain issue, a certain disease. He's now going to have to contend with that for a while. Life plans are going to change. How in the world, wow, how is going to be moving on in a way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be very, very pleased with my life? How in the world is this good? And I had a thought. Wild thought. I'm showing the spot because I didn't know what to say. What is the answer? Thought number one. Svi Yehuda, a kind cook, had to have his leg amputated. For whatever reason, he didn't end up with anesthesia, and he had to have his leg amputated. He had his leg amputated without anesthesia. And his Talmidim asked him, Rebbe, how in the world did you bear the pain? How did you manage? He said, the pain I felt was the pain of Am Yisrael. I want to hone in on that idea. He's not saying he did not feel pain. And he's not saying the only pain I felt was pain of Am Yisrael. He's saying the pain that I felt was the pain of Am Yisrael. What does that mean? He had a leg problem. There are a lot of people whose problem with HaKadosh Baruch Hu perhaps could be construed as if they're crippled in physically. Again, let me say that one more time so everyone understands that. Anything that exists spiritually exists physically. So if there is a concept of people physically being crippled, that is simply a representation of spiritual crippled people. People that are spiritually crippled. And this person that's physically crippled, it doesn't mean that he is spiritually crippled, but it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose him to represent the group of people, the world of people that are out there that are spiritually crippled. Why was he chosen? I have no idea. There are people that are missing arms. What's an arm? The arm of asiya, of activity. Al-Matilat Yadayim. The hands are the hands of creativity in the world. Creation, positive creation. But there are a lot of people in the world that create negatively and don't create positively. It's not coming to say that you're the one that's now going to lose your hand, Chas V'Shalom. You are the one that uses your hands improperly. But rather, you are being chosen to represent all the people or part of the people that have that spiritual handicap. That don't know how to use their hands for Kedusha. Don't know how to create positive Kedusha in the world. So now, this person could be a holy, holy person. He's going to represent that physical. Why is this person chosen to that person? I have no way of knowing. That's already way beyond me. But I can tell you that you're representing a piece of the nation. And everyone is a part of the nation. Everyone. The person goes to the army. The person goes to the army. And a man 10 years ago was in a mission, a dangerous mission, and he wrote a letter to his wife. Happened to have been a few hours before he was murdered. The letter became famous, and he wrote about how he greatly loves them and misses them. What he's up to doing now is terribly dangerous, and he doesn't know if he'll ever see them again. But they should understand I'm not allowed to be scared because I'm doing this for the nation. You see, then he may not live, but we're here. The nation continues to live here in Eretz Yisrael. He did not make it. But because of him, we're here. The Kahena Rabot. There are many, many such examples. When a person goes to the army, the Minchas Dinah says, we have only 3 mitzvahs in the Torah that are Yared Val Yavli, that you give your life for. And Mochama, war, is not one of them. It's not listed. You give your life for idolatry, you give your life for improper relations, intercourse with a woman, forbidden relations, and 3, for not killing someone else. Those are the 3 Yarag Valyavras. You get killed and don't do the Avera. Don't kill him, don't do the Avera. 3 things. The Menachas Chinuch says, army is dangerous to you. It's Safek Pikuach Nefesh. You may die. And it's not one of the 3. There should be a 4th. Why don't we say there are 4? Also the mitzvah of serving in the army. Why isn't it in there? Comes Rav Soloveitchik and he says, because those 3 are 3 as individuals. Once a person joins the army, he's no longer a member of it. He's no longer an individual citizen, but now he's part of the nation. He is now swallowed up, enveloped entirely by the nation. And the only question at this point is, will the nation survive? Is it pikuach nefesh for the nation? Will the nation survive? If the nation will survive, then there's no longer a question, will this individual survive? There's a lot of suffering that goes on. Terrible, terrible suffering. Some people, when they're dying, they suffer for such a long time in their death. Some people, they live, but there's so much suffering goes on. It's all representative. They were chosen to represent those issues in Am Yisrael, and they're taking it for the nation. They're taking it for the nation. And hopefully that person maybe will do tshuva. And when that person does tshuva, when that person does, connects with their difficulty, when the people that see it connect to Hashem with the difficulty in the face of adversity, it does such a takana, tikkun to the world. Says the Kaddish Baruch Hu, we're going to repair this problem. That is a problem. People are spiritually handicapped, we're going to fix that. People are spiritually destructive, we're going to fix that. And we turn to Hashem. We don't run away from Hashem.
Bye.
done. And baby vomited a little. Pulled on it. And then the baby flipped over. Usually 3-month-old baby doesn't flip over so early. Flipped over on his stomach and couldn't get back. Couldn't lift his head. And he started breathing in what he had vomited. The life happened to have caught it just at the point where he stopped breathing. Breathe in, couldn't breathe, choked. He called Hatzala. They gave him a shot right away to try to get the heart going again. The heart is beating, but the baby's been in a coma since. Waiting for their son Yitzchak to wake up. Doctors were hoping it was going to happen on Sunday. On Thursday night. So I'm at Mincha in the hospital. Still not. There's an outrageous amount of difficulty. One of my wife's roommates, terrible story. Terrible. She had a stomach surgery. They messed it up. Did another one. Messed that up. She had problems for years. She suffered for 12 years from 23. Starting at 23 years old until now, she's 35. The problem is that she's not married. She's terrified. Who's going to marry me? She's got serious issues now. Serious. Who's going to marry? The whole years of social life came to an end for 12 years. A lot of suffering. One thing I picked up, every time a person suffers, you have to pick up on this. Every time. And to Gemara, daven when you're healthy. Don't wait till Chas Shalom you get sick. You have to really daven. You gotta daven really seriously. There are so many problems, so much suffering. You gotta daven really focus. If we lose focus, a lot of times the bottom line is because we don't really feel we're up against the wall. And when that day comes that you're really against the wall, you manage to have nowhere to turn. All of a sudden you could cry out and you could focus. There are a lot of people out there, not for ourselves, they're manish. And when I'm in this predicament, and you see this one, and I look this one, and I look that one, and my wife's in a bad predicament. I'm very, very weak, and I'm hoping we're going to see improvement any day. But you look around, you have terrible, terrible things going on all the time. How many people need it to be low? As if we're against the wall. We should understand that tefillah is the thing to turn to, and really seriously, to really cry about it, really put every ounce of kalach and focus into every word to help all of Am Yisrael. We really want every word of tefillah to come true.
Oh,
Major headaches, and I don't have So I go to a neurologist. I went to a neurologist, and he looks. You're all fine. There's no issues. So it must be a stress headache. So what are you stressed about? I said, Doc, you know, I don't know if I, that makes any sense. Big, calm guy. I don't really get stressed that much. I don't really believe that. Gotta tell you the truth. He goes, no, that's really what I think. It's true. You know, everybody has stress. How many years you've been married? He's like, well, now I've been married 2 years. Yeah, I bet it's early marriage. You must be stressed about that. I was like, I don't know, Doc. You know, I got. If you tell me, I definitely have stress. I guess I'll find something somewhere in my life. I must have some stress. I'll get rid of that from my. Turns out he was dead wrong. It was a dehydration headache. I wasn't used to drinking enough. He gave me some painkiller. It gave me the biggest headache in the world. I started drinking. It all went away. But when the doctor says, you've got a problem, you've got stress, so then of course you have to figure out, like even the guy that knows the thing, he's got stress. You'll find something, I guess I have stress over this. If the Ribbono Shel Olam, if someone says, you know, you've got a problem with your mitzvahs, don't look at my mitzvahs, what are you looking at my mitzvahs, don't tell me that. And the way it works is that there's a Gemara in Brachos that says that if something befalls upon you, you should be tola in your mitzvahs. It says you should be mefashbesh b'masa. You should check your ways and see what's wrong. So you check your ways, and you know what? Badak, he checked, umata, v'lo matza. He didn't find anything. No, you know, God, I'm coming back to you. I've got to tell you I'm perfect. So then the Gemara says, oh, you know what? Tola v'bitl Torah. It must be that you've wasted time from Torah. That's like the cheat shot. Like, well, I guess everybody's over on that one. How could you get that one? Okay, everybody's guilty. So Rav Kook says a very, very beautiful idea. Very, very beautiful idea. But it makes a lot of sense. He says, check your ways. You check your ways. And if I tell you, yeah, you have a problem with your tefillin, with the way you do mitzvah tefillin, like, don't tell me I've got a problem with mitzvah tefillin. You have a problem with the way you keep shabbat. Don't tell me I've got a problem. But if I tell you, you know, bittul Torah. Bittul Torah is about the time that you're free, not the time that you're supposed to be sleeping and you're sleeping. It's not about the time that you're supposed to be working out and you're working out. It's not about the time that you're supposed to be doing other things. It's about the time that you're supposed to be learning and you're not learning. Everything, right? You should go to sleep on time. You should daven on time. You should learn on time. You know, everything you should do, fully, full-hearted. Sometimes, if you look at that one specific thing, you may not realize that there's something lacking. But what's Bittul Torah? So I like to say, you know, let's say a few months into yeshiva, you haven't heard from her, and all of a sudden, you're never going to believe it. But Daphna has got a letter for you. And it's got her name on it. That's unbelievable. Now that's a good thing. And first thing you do, you do not take a messy letter opener and rip it open. Heaven forfend. You will slowly and delicately open that letter. You may even steam it open. You're gonna go, you're not gonna read it in front of the whole Beis Medrash with very curious eyes reading over your shelf. You're gonna go to your room, or maybe more people there, so maybe you will go to the Beis Medrash where there's no one. Just tonight. And yeah, you go to a place in seclusion. You read it a few more times. Read it upside down. Maybe you could find some hidden messages, codes. Hey, there's my name every 50 left. You smell it a little, maybe you spray it. And then you delicately fold it back up. You put it in your cubby. And then, every now and then, you take There's nothing new in there. They're no more Chidushim. You're not going to buy them anything. But you reread it again and again. It's a love letter. You'll reread it. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a letter, lengthy letter, it's a difficult letter, but it's a love letter. It's a letter that says, I love you, and I want you to get close to me, and here's how to do it. We're going to read it as much as we can, backwards and forwards, and do it. Study it. Embrace it. That's Talmud Torah. And if there's something lacking in the time that we spend with Torah, we have Bittul Torah. So what does that mean? It means that we don't love HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way we ought to, that there's something missing. So if you check, no, I really do all the mitzvahs. I do the tefillin, I do talis, I do this, I do that, I do all the mitzvahs. So then Bittulin, Bittul Torah, understand, no. There's a love of the mitzvahs that you're missing. How could I show you that you're missing something still? But there's room to grow. The room to grow is, if there's any lack of love on your part with Torah, then you know that a piece of your mitzvah is missing. And Mamash, Rabosai, I tell you, there are levels. There are levels of focus. And when you're up against the wall, we learn to focus really well. And how about we should all really try to focus all the time. Try to learn to care about all the issues, all the tars, as if there are issues, because that's what we learn. When we have things that we become sensitized to, then we can become sensitized to everybody else's tars. Kuda. We have to always recognize. There's a lot of tough. Today I was thinking. It's a cavalic thing, the fever went down, the pain, what's going on, it's unbelievable, we don't even know if we're advancing, not advancing, it's unbelievable. And then, you know, like, I read it as a message. Started to do better with the pain, and then like fever came back after 2 days of no fever, and I was like, that's not a good thing. It's not a very bad thing, a fever issue. But it's like, okay, it can make the fever go away, it can make it come back. It was almost like a cut where I was like, hey, I really am controlling this. Yivduus Hashem b'simcha means, the Gemara Bracha says, that you have to be mevarech HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the tov and the ra equally. Even the bad, you have to be mevarech Hashem. So Rav Soloveitchik said, I don't understand. I just don't get it. How in the world do you expect me to worship Hashem, connect Hashem in the same way, in the good, bless Hashem, mevarech, bless Hashem in the same way with the good and the bad? Bad is bad. And you know, Rav Moshe, we believe that. We're not all that crazy. There's a different bracha. There's altogether a different bracha. When something terrible happens, it's actually a bracha, you say. Baruch Chayin Emes. You don't say Baruch Atah Hashem. You don't say Shem Hashem. And you don't say Atova Meitav, this is glorious. If something good happens, you say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Atova Meitav. Or Shachianu. It's not good. It's even a different bracha. What's Pshat of the Gemara? It's a Mishnah. Mishnah and Mesechus Brachos. Rav Soloveitchik furthered the question. It says in the Gemara that you can't have Nevuah. A Navi Ein Shore Nevuah. He has no presence of Nevuah. Doesn't happen for him. Ela Mitoch Simcha. Unless it's out of Simcha. Yirmiyahu, when he prophesied the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Yeshayahu, when he had a similar prophecy, it was B'Simcha. How can it be B'Simcha? Micha, destruction of Yerushalayim, B'Simcha. How can it be? All the Nevi'im, terrible things that they prophesied. How is it that Simcha? Rav Soloveitchik said, no, the definition of Simcha is, this is my avoda for today, for the past 3 weeks. And this certainly gives me chizuk. Hope that my chizuk will give you chizuk as well. It means to know that Hashem is there. No matter what happens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is present. A few years ago, 6 years, 7 years ago, my wife had some crazy infection, some crazy disease. I didn't know what it was. Baruch Hashem, it was in the end not a big deal. They just had to figure out what it was. A few days in the hospital, they figured it out. It took a few days. And the head of bacteriology comes up to us and says, Mrs. Kvelvasser, in 20 years and 10,000 patients, I have never seen this. And my wife was a little down and out at the time. So I said, isn't the greatest news ever? If you would have had like a simple virus, cold, you know, that's just like everybody else. You're not special. HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats you special. This one was handpicked. She liked it only a little. We could laugh about it later, right? Lamaisa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no matter what happens, every one of us are handpicked with difficulties. Why? And you ask why, but like, why are you handpicking me for this? Maybe some of the thoughts earlier addressed that a little. I really don't have any answers. I also have questions. But I know that knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, that's really the only thing that's concerning. In your mamash, it's an avoda. It's a real avoda. When anything and everything happens, you gotta understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. He is there. And he's not just closing his eyes. You forget. You I've abandoned. He does care. He loves us. And it's a shem. Akol Yatov. When we say Akol Yatov, 90% of the time, 99% of the time, it means Tov the way real Tov. Like good. Actual Tov. Good. And Mitzvah Shem, we should never have to retranslate it as ultimately somehow it's for good. But actually, we'll see. Closing song.
Thank you.
Red Straw and Davy Straw for everybody out there, including oneself, to get closer to the Rebbeinu Shalom.